What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
Hey, Bray, I got one shameless plug, okay? I know we're doing this movie. It's not a plug, but...
You plug it in the cold open?
This ain't even a real plug. I guess this is like... I feel like I relate to a movie because I missed the podcast last week because I myself was in Jamaica.
Oh, right. That's why you missed it. You were. I mean,
I could. Hey, I was Stella.
I don't even want to say it. But I was like, Stella. You were getting your group. I mean,
come on, Brett. No, you say it, Jace. Say it.
You're getting your groove back. It just feels too early to say something like that.
Come on. We talk about me, not the movie. I will say this. Watching the movie, it was my first time in Jamaica, and I really enjoy visiting Black countries, because I feel like a lot of times I grew up, like, people are like, oh, I'm gonna go on a European excursion or something after college or whatever, but I'm like, man, when you go to a Black country, it is like they treat you different. It is like, it's like you're home somewhere else, and everyone's like loving and nice, and people look out for you. They give you like pet names in Jamaica, which is like just a regular human instead of a nickname. It's just like a, like, I would be like, you know, I say Bray instead of Braylock, but it'd be like a whole nother name. Like, I met people who would name Michael, but they call him like Chauncey. It's just a whole nother name because they're like, you look like this, like, you look like that Chauncey. Name. Yeah. So every time they're like, oh, you American? All right, Chad. And that was the name the whole time.
Oh, so they just made fun of you.
I thought it was endearing. I thought it was loving. Nah, man.
Everyone in Jamaica was like, man, fuck Chad.
Where in Jamaica were you?
I went to, we went to two places. We went to Portland. We went inland. So like, there's a lot of places you actually can go.
You weren't on the beach.
We were, but the thing is, I think everyone goes to like Negril, Montego Bay or stuff. So we drove in to go further to the beaches. But it was nice, man. And it was nice being around, like, the only sad part is that we found out all the resorts, none are owned by Black Jamaicans or Black people,
well,
period.
That's the thing about a lot of the islands, right? The Caribbean.
Yeah. It was like, they were like, oh yeah, we finally got they were like, we got this back from England. And I was like, man, how do white people come in here and you had to get your land back from them? I was like, what you mean? So it was like, yeah. So it was a lot of, I know. I was like,
yeah, they were colonized too.
The only thing that made me sad is we were there and there were a lot of young Black people. And,
I think all the Black people got there.
I know. But they kept talking about how, like, the one that made me sad though, they were like, they were super loving and they were like, dope. And we were kind of talking about, you know, America and Jamaica. And I was like, man, some people are scared to come to Jamaica. And all of them, like, some of the workers were like, we're never going to America. They were like, you know, here, some of them had lost family to the gang life, but they always would say, but that person was in that life. They're like, every time we watch a video of America, y'all just do nothing and nothing happens when someone gets murdered. And I was like, yeah man, that's America for you. And they were like, legit. They were like, yeah, we don't need to come visit anymore. And I was like,
y'all just do nothing.
Well, they were saying how basically one of the guy was like, you could be doing nothing, a cop could kill you, and then nothing happens to the cop. And it's like, yeah. This is crazy hearing other people know, like, your family business a little bit. I was like, all right, cool. But that was the only downside to it.
That's right. What was the upside? What was the upside? Let's
starting the podcast.
We can't end on that downside.
I realized it went that way.
You took the energy way down.
I realized it went that way. It was sunny.
Help us out, Gerard. Tell us how Stella got her groove back or something, you know?
Wow.
Hey man, I mean, we need to get our groove back. I don't know. Maybe
that
if you,
out for so long.
You know, we
got
don't embarrass us, man. You know, we got to guess, man. We ain't.
No,
like,
I'm saying
man.
You took it down, so we need to. You know what I mean? We need to get back up. So I don't know. Maybe if you told us how Stella got her groove back.
For the people at home who can't see this, Bray is looking directly at Gerard and earnestly asking this question.
No, I'm just.
Maybe you can tell. Maybe you can just tell us.
You were in
Jamaica. I mean, you can just tell us how.
Melissa, can we start the show, please?
Jonathan Braylock, James the Third, Gerard Milligan. What more can I say? You know what it is. Black men can jump.
Black actors, man. Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
I'm 41. Are women in America that thirsty that they gotta be coming up in here and having sex with my child?
The line was something like that.
Not exactly.
I mean, that wasn't exactly the line.
The line was, it was like something like that.
I believe it was desperate.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly the line.
They weren't saying thirsty like that?
No, I don't think they said thirsty. Oh, yeah. Get my drink.
Yo, that scene was so awkward. She said, my baby.
My baby is what she said.
Yeah.
Her 20-year-old baby. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's a baby to me.
He's
they
my
were the
baby.
Same
not
age.
The Stella. Not the Stella, though. Lord have mercy.
He's my baby.
Oh, so feisty.
For those of you who are listening for the first time, this wonderful voice that you're experiencing right now in your headphones or on your speakers, that's Jonathan Braylock.
Ugh. This voice that's disgusted is Gerard Milligan.
And this voice is James the Third.
Oh, that's James.
Hey, that's James.
Hey, there it is.
Yeah, what's up? How y'all doing, baby? What's going on?
We're
trying to get our groove back this morning.
Okay, well, making sure you don't have to just suffer through our voices, we have an incredible guest today.
Wait, I got to do my drums. Chantrell, everyone gets a special drum roll, so you get a special drum roll. Here we go.
Chantrell P. Lewis, everyone. Please give it up. Give it up.
Welcome.
It's my turn now?
Yeah, you with us now. You here. You with us.
I'm just going to tell
She's
y'all
been waiting.
Because... You know, me and my best friend been over here drinking mimosas. And so she had to excuse herself and go in the other room because she was like, I'm going to cut up too bad.
Tell her come back. Tell her. No, listen, you might have a mimosa in the shot.
Y'all not going to be able to handle both of us on here at the same time. All three of y'all not going to be able to handle us.
That's
okay.
Fair.
Let's hope y'all can just handle me. I don't know what y'all pronouns are, but. Black men.
Yeah. Hello. First off, I respect that because I just saw you look. Y'all can't handle all both of us, and it was like dead in all of our souls. I just felt you look through each one of our screens. I'm talking to you and you and you.
It was like that part in the movie when Winston was like, "I can handle you," and she was like, "How do you know?" How do you know?
Chantrell is a director. She has a film called In Our Mother's Gardens that has just been released on Netflix. So
yeah,
you know what you need to do? You need to go watch that.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Because we know you got a Netflix password. And
right.
If you don't, hit James up because James got Netflix. Borrow James' Netflix password and borrow James' Netflix password.
Gerard, you got to stop doing this.
I swear to God, if our listeners don't have Netflix, I'm going to be pissed.
You know somebody with a Netflix password, okay?
You know? That's not the way to do it.
Listen, if you ain't got it, tweet at James to get James's Netflix password, and now
this
everybody
will be
can
good
watch.
for Chantrell's movie. If you sign up for Netflix and watch that first, that's gonna be points on the movie. So that's don't real. Get somebody else's password. If you don't have Netflix, sign up.
That's right. You're right, James. You're right. When you write, you're right, bro. When you write, you're right. You know what I mean? James, can I borrow your Netflix password?
No.
Okay, all right. Just testing. Just testing to see how for real you were. Just testing to see how real it was.
Amazing. Yes. I forgot to tell everyone we review films of leading Black actors. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And today, we are reviewing How Stella Got Her Groove Back, which came out in 1998. This is a R-rated comedy romance film, drama.
Based on the best-selling book, baby.
Starring Angela Bassett, Taye Diggs, and Whoopi Goldberg.
And the queen.
Yes, Regina King is also.
Come on, brother.
I mean, this entire cast is pretty strong. It's like a stacked cast.
It's a pretty stacked cast.
Regina King been playing like the hood best friend in so many movies for years. And it's just like, I remember we reviewed, what was it, Poetic Justice? And it's like, yo, she's had that kind of like part. So now that she's like Regina King, I'm like, look at you, man. Look at the come up. Like, look at the come up. Anyway, go ahead, Bray. My bad.
I was just going to say that this film made $39 million at the box office when it was released. I don't know how much it costs. Sometimes
I'm looking 20. It costs 20.
Okay. And yeah, it's a, oh yeah. Well, shall we do initial thoughts? Shall we just get into it? Yeah, go ahead.
Can I jump in? Cause it's a whole lot of masculine energy up in this joint and I'm the special invited guest and I know how to hold my own. Were you all born when that movie came out?
Yes.
Oh yeah. I was old by then. I just wasn't allowed to watch it.
Oh, okay.
I think I saw it back then.
Okay. I famously wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies, so I didn't watch. I wasn't allowed to watch it either.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to.
But I was
like
alive.
A generational test, real quick. Okay. All right.
So we're 90s kids.
We were there.
Millennials.
We remember how big this was.
Millennials. We are millennials.
Okay, got it.
Because I remember Terry McMillan, right? That's who wrote it? Yeah. I remember Terry McMillan. Yeah, I remember when the book came out. Mm-hmm. What I remember about this movie is like Terry McMillan, the book came out. And I remember when the movie came out, I remember specifically, and I hope I'm not, you know, someone got a bootleg copy. So on Sunday, like my cousins used to have like Sunday dinner. On Sunday, all the aunties and cousins was in the living room and kicked the kids out. And they like put this movie on and it was like the big deal. Like
here's the thing. Gerard has been promoting borrowing.
I was about to say, I could tell because he was also talking about getting somebody else's Netflix password. So he get it honest. He's like, I get it from my family. Okay. Relationally. How to like get somebody else, get something off of somebody else without having to pay for it full price. Got it.
The bootleg costs the same price as the ticket. It's just that the bootleg go longer because you know, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. You know, they had it at the beauty salon and the barbershop. Like I'm trying to support small businesses as well. You know what
All
I mean?
Right.
So
for sure.
You know. But yeah, they saw it and it was like such a big deal. And I remember one thing. I think it was I don't know the exact moment, but I can tell Taye Diggs had did something. So I remember hearing my one aunt go, "Woo, Lord!" I just remember that sound, and wow. I was like, "Oh!" And I had no clue what it was meaning, but I was like, "Oh, he must have took his shirt off or something." And it was just, "Woo, Lord!"
And could you tell what part that was when you watched the movie again?
I do. I think it was the part. I think it was the part when they were. When he was like rushing to take his clothes off and he took his shirt off and the pants and she hopped on his back. Uh-huh. I think that was it. Cause I feel like I remember hearing Angela Bassett laugh. And I think at that point she's like, I got you. And they're like giggling. So I want to say it's that part. But also it could have been the part at the very end when like.
Could have been a shower scene.
The shower scene. Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, that's a ooh, Lord. I said ooh, Lord when that.
I know.
Ooh, Lord.
I was like, oh my God.
I clutched pearls that weren't there. I was like.
But yeah. Okay. What's crazy is that this film has a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right. Get Rotten Tomatoes out of here. Somebody close the site down.
Yeah, they do need to close that site down though.
So. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, please, Chantrell, like, what was your Did you see this movie when it came out in theaters?
I don't remember. See, my memory is not set up like that. Right. I mean, I'm, you know, because you said it came out in when? 91?
98.
Oh, 98. I was in college, so probably so. I was at Howard, so it's quite possible. I don't remember, like, going to, you know, if I did, I probably caught the Metro at Howard Shaw Metro, the Green Line to I think the Red Line to Pentagon City.
Which go was like ahead, a, talking all these DC trains. You
know, I love it.
Look, I grew up in Southeast. You talking?
Oh, you talking about the Earth? Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
come on down. You talking about right. the Red well, Line?
I hear that DC coming out right now. So yeah, I probably would have seen it at Pentagon City if I saw it at the theaters, which I'm sure, you know, that's what we're doing on weekends. If I wasn't pledging or something, you know. So, you know.
Whatever your initial thought was. Like, yeah, did you like
when,
it?
When you first saw it, did you?
Not because remember, so I don't remember when I first saw it. Because again, like I've been telling folks that there are things that I might have come across in my, you know, my years as a young woman. Like in my 20s, that would have like gone over my head because I didn't have that experience.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of stuff just went over. I couldn't feel it like that. I wanted to feel it like in my soul, like I could understand like getting a younger man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in my 20s, you know, I was just like,
yeah,
oh,
how can you, right, how can you relate?
Yeah, at 41, 42, that's a different story. I'm a married woman though, but I just came back from Jamaica. You know, the Jamaicans were definitely just admiring.
They were testing you. They were throwing up some tests.
Those young men. And I told my husband, I'm like, you ain't got to worry about the pool boy now. Like, you ain't, because it was a solo trip.
Right.
And he was like, oh, but I'm like, I'm not checking for the pool boy though. I'm not checking for the pool boy. So I think being able, and I love this, you know, me and my husband will watch it together. And I'm not going to say we role play or anything, but
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say we role play.
But right. Maybe every now and then I'm like, hey, you want to brush off that Jamaican accent?
Even though he's Nigerian, so he don't really got a Jamaican accent. You know, it's like, I'm just saying it's a different experience watching it as a 42-year-old, almost 43-year-old grown woman. You know, but it's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable experience, to say the least.
Yes. I mean, I will say, I feel like this movie is incredible. Like, there's also so much joy in it too, which I loved. Like, yeah. And I feel like, I mean, we're in a different era of films right now. But you know, we've talked about on this podcast how a lot of films that are made today are focused a little bit more on like the kind of black suffering and the hardships of the black experience. And it's so nice to just see a movie about a woman, you know, who is doing well in her career, you know, and then just decides to take this vacation in Jamaica and has a great time and falls in love. And then it's like, oh, this guy's really young, but like that, like, and that's the main struggle of a movie, which is like a legitimate, like we all, like we, not all of us, but like, you know, people can relate to, you know, being in relationships with somebody who is a bit younger or whatever. But it was just, it was nice to like watch a film about that, you know, and that was just about life really, and not about like police brutality or racism.
Or racism she
like
had
that.
To face at the office. It was like,
right.
You know, yeah.
And
you
I
know,
thought
there were moments of, she had to deal with some microaggressions, which is
of
why
course,
she put it on
course.
Firm. But
yes.
it wasn't trauma porn. Yeah. There was a lot of great, amazing movies in the 90s that came out that was just like a reflection of like just everyday regular black life.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Whoopi Goldberg and Angela Bassett were incredible together. Like every scene they had together, I was like, this is amazing. And also the only thing that was throwing me off was the fact that Angela Bassett was actually 40 and I was looking at her like,
yeah, like she was 40 when she made it. Like that year.
Like, what? You 29?
That year.
I couldn't.
Oh. One thing that threw me off was Tay Diggs' Jamaican accent.
Okay, it did, yeah, right? Oh, I was like, all right, but you know what, bro? You try.
It's so funny because when he did it at first, I actually legitimately thought like this guy was faking a Jamaican accent. I thought it was like an American faking a Jamaican accent to like pick up this woman, and then I was like, oh no, that's real, and he's gonna
can
have
I
that
come
for the whole
sit with you? Can I sit with
you? Thank
you. You are lovely woman.
I was like, all right. Okay.
What'd you guys think?
Did you want to go over here?
I mean, I can go. I feel like this is at least my second time seeing the movie, and then I've probably seen like bits and pieces mm-hmm. and stuff every now and again. And like, it's definitely different watching it now as an older guy. And the thing that like hit me the most mm-hmm. was like the scene where they go to the movie and she's just like fully miserable watching the movie and everyone else in the audience is young and loving mm-hmm. it. And it was just like, mm-hmm. that was such a...
Yeah, man. She went to some freaking teen comedy.
Yeah,
some teen comedy.
And she like kept, the whole time she kept being like, you know, you like eating Cocoa Puffs and like...
in the bed.
So you were just getting, you were just
like,
getting
he
triggered.
He was 20, you know, like me in... I mean, I still do some of this stuff now, but it's like, but like to it, it was like to an insane degree when I was just getting out of college, you know, around that age. So it was like, you know, I think at the time, I don't know how it hit me at the time. I don't think I even had the semblance of understanding of like, is he behaving like a child? Is she, you know, are they, what's the issue? I guess he's just really young, you know, but something about watching it now and then seeing the, I already talked about this, but seeing the, her meeting the parents, that really hit me.
Yeah.
In a way that I was like, why does this, I feel like I'm being stabbed in the chest watching her have to interact with this mom that is her age. Like, I couldn't deal with that. But anyway, great, really great movie. Love it. Really, it really is like a lovely, like romance kind of story. It also threw me a little bit, I think, watching it with today's lens of like how everybody was like, you don't have no fun. You're not having fun, you know, but I kept trying to like divorce my feelings of like, you know, she's a hardworking woman. And like, like she just likes to do her thing. She likes to run. She likes to do this, you know, and like it hit me the most when the boy was like, can you please have fun on this trip?
But then her son.
I started thinking like, but you know, that's the whole point of this movie. Like she really is like such a workaholic that she's not allowing herself to enjoy, you know, enjoy the, even just the little things, mm-hmm. you know? But I was like, I just felt like, I feel like my 2021 lens was like, she should be able to do whatever she wants. Stop telling her to have fun. She, you know, like,
I
that
know.
Was the default. I
but see, what's so interesting about that to me, though, is that there are movies with men who are workaholics and people are like, dude, you got to live a little, like go like take a
exactly.
vacation and like have some sex.
Yeah.
And so yeah. this movie does that. And then so like, why can't a woman.
Yeah, no, exactly. I just watched Anger Management, and that was that. That's that whole. Oh, yeah. That's the
right.
whole premise
like
of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I like this movie a lot because it does a lot of what I think Braylock said. It's just like I just like that it humanizes us, and it's like it's not super racially like contingent on what's happening. I will say this: two things came into my mind the whole time watching it. The Eddie Murphy bit about how. Fellas be real confident, and then this girl going on a trip to Africa, and it's just it's like you over here being confident, like I'm about to do all this. Your girl, and then some dude just waiting there in Jamaica, just swinging his dick and is like putting it on his shoulder. That, and I will say, my partner teases me about it. I grew up loving women who are older than me, and so when I was watching the movie, she goes, "This is what you do. You like used to just like going on trips, find older women." I was like, "No," but there's like a confidence. Like to me, is when I saw. Tay Diggs, I'm like, I can see exactly, besides Angela Bassett clearly being very attractive, I could see exactly why he was attracted to her, because of like, it was a confidence in knowing what I like, knowing what I don't like, being like, how old is you? What are you doing? It's like, I just understood both sides of that coin very well. Like she kind of forced him to grow up. He almost forced her to have more fun. And honestly, like they both were trying to get each other to, I don't know, find, maybe this is too much into it, but finding what their actual passion was, like, you know, when she was talking about building things and talking about, you know, selling the furniture, or not selling the furniture, but making the furniture. And then, you know, his dad wanted him to be a doctor to make money, but he liked cooking food. And it's just like both trying to figure out what's going on. Even though they're like 20 years apart, they still have the same issues, which I think happens and connects people at the same time. So right. I really liked it. Also, I love that it was black people or black women with money. And it showed like the one with money, the one who still had a job, who was an EMT, who was like still with the shits, but you know, still out here. We saw the cookout, and it wasn't like the super generic cookout. We got to see him interact with the family members, and then we got to see, I don't know. I really like the different facets of black life we got to see. I really got sentimental at certain points, and I was like, oh, this is real cute. But I just really loved them partying, especially that pajama party. I've never been to one. I want to go to a pajama party so bad. So I was here for that. But
you want to go to a pajama party where in the middle of it, they're like, all right, everyone, take off your clothes. And then everyone starts taking off.
I mean, that part was a bit
much. I
forgot
there was straight up nudity in this movie. I fully forgot that.
That part was a little rough because I always, after House Party 2, the Pajammy Jammy Jam, I've always wanted to go to a pajama party. And I'm like, Stella went to one. I can go to one too. You know what I mean?
yeah.
But let's break it down.
Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, man, you know, I just had a job end, which, you know, I was very fortunate to have. But it's so funny how quickly stress starts to accumulate when you're not working.
It's too much. It's too much. It's heavy.
You know,
I got the shakes, and you know, the heart palpitations, all of it.
I agree. I will say I've had the benefit of not being unemployed this long since 2009. And what are we in April? Soon to be May. And I have not had a paycheck all of 2024. So this is the most stress I've ever had. My parents may need to get an aide, and I'm like, who's coming to save the day? So stress is high. Anxiety is high.
And, you know, sometimes to talk about this stress, therapy can be a safe space. Like, get that stuff off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down, you know, instead of just keeping it all bottled up and feeling like you have to hold everything inside. I know therapy has helped me. I almost look at it as like check-in, like, sometimes I got a lot to say, sometimes not so much, but it's like, it is super, super helpful.
Yeah. I appreciate getting the tools to like kind of understand the mechanism of how I'm behaving, you know, and reacting in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I use BetterHelp, and Timothy, black male therapist, saves the day because he gets it, man. I'm like, you know what? Thank you, bro. But sometimes it's just 30 minutes of just me rambling. And I'm like, oh, you didn't even say hello yet. and he's like, keep going. I'm like, thank you. Yes.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule, which is absolutely essential these days. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you can get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you want, switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/jump today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/jump.
You gotta jump to get that BetterHelp. BetterHelp!
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road, ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartland!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or 5-star hotels for 2-star prices in Cabo.
Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, you open Google Chrome on your phone. You're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with. When you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no, he's coming your way. It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
Well, the start of this film is, I'm trying to remember, is just her. Is it her at work?
Running. She's running. She in shape, I think. Wait, can we talk about Angela Bassett for a second?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We should.
Like, there is some, like, I remember, has she been nominated for an Oscar? Hasn't won yet.
Yeah, she was nominated for
What Love Got to Do With It.
Right, exactly.
All right. There's something about Angela Bassett in particular to me where it's like, I know people always say, like, you know, Viola Davis is, you know, the Black Meryl Streep or whatever, like, however you say it. But, like, there's something about Angela Bassett where, like, every time you've seen her, she's always had these, like, award-winning performances, no matter what kind of movie it's in. You know, you ever see a person who, like, you're like, ah, the script isn't that good, but that actor elevated, like, the script a little bit better. And I'm looking at her like, yo, no matter what she's in, she's all, like, whether it's American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Like, even I watched the episode of, like, 9-1-1, and I'm like, you're too good for 9-1-1. You know what I mean? But, like, she be rocking on it. And in this movie, I was like, she's beautiful. I couldn't get over that. I was like, I couldn't get over that. I started Googling Courtney B. Vance to be like, man, brother, you so lucky. I literally was looking at her. I was like, you lucky brother. Man, who else was in that Yale class?
Yeah. It's so funny, too, because I think I've talked about this on the podcast because we've talked about Angela Bassett a few times, but my mom has never liked Angela Bassett, and I every time I watch her in something, I try to figure out what it might be, and I feel like it's that she makes so many choices, like everything, she makes a moment out of everything, and not to a point where it's overacting. I never feel like she's doing too much, but I wonder if that's what it is to my mom, like that it feels like she literally is able to make a moment out of everything. And so it's like, it, I wonder if it's like too much for her.
Oh, she's doing the most or something
like
that?
Yeah.
I mean, I really like Angela Bassett. I just feel like
she's great. I feel like she's so natural. I mean, there's so many times in this movie where I was like, one, I feel like she's nailing every moment. And then she has like, I feel like she has so many different levels. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she can be like stern or whatever, but she's had like, I don't know. It was great. I thought the whole movie, I was like, man, she's so good. She's such a great actor.
The whole movie.
I'm shocked every time I hear my mom say it. It's like, why?
But it's also something about her too that it's like, I mean, I think we've talked about it before, but there's this thing, not necessarily with her so much, but when I was looking at Regina King in particular, I'm like, man, there are these Black actors who have been around for so long, and now we know them as great, but the amount of work they've had to do and the age when people start calling them great is something that like always is like, I don't know why. I mean, it bothers me a little bit because I'm like, you know, sometimes there's always some blonde starlet that people are like, oh my God, this is the next coming of whoever the heck, and that person wins an Oscar.
I feel like Angela Bassett also falls though into that category of like, you know, it feels like there were way more Black movies in the 90s than there are now, right? And like Angela Bassett is in that camp of people that was like, she is great, you know, and but didn't quite, not in the same, she didn't get exalted in the same way that like a Meryl Streep did for whatever reason. And I feel like she's still looked at and respected in that way. But like, you know, but like people don't talk about, like when people are talking about great actor,
actresses or whatever, they might default to like a Meryl Streep instead of the default being Angela Bassett. Where I feel like it could very, very much equally be like, you're like, oh yeah, Angela Bassett. Also, it's the Oscars thing too, right? Like how many?
It is. It's literally how many people watch your film, people care. But like, but again, this movie here, it's so crazy because this movie here, you have Angela Bassett and Regina King just like in this movie together and EGOT winning Whoopi Goldberg. You know what I mean?
Yes.
When you think about the black female power in this movie, it's just, I don't know, man. It's something about it that I love to see it, but also it feels like such a rarity that you get to see it and not, again, to see them just like either hanging out, like talking shit, like literally Regina King throughout this movie is like, look at you glowing. I want to know all the details. And at one point, sorry, this is skipping, but at one point when she leaves after Stella first gets back from Jamaica and she's like, all right, I gotta go to work. And she cuts on the siren. And then all of a sudden you see Stella look up and she's not rushing off anywhere. She's just cutting on the siren as she's leaving. It's like, I love that kind of like, she's still ratchet, still has a job, still borrowing money. But no one makes fun of her really for being down and out, except for the very beginning when they all kind of are taking shots at each other.
Right.
It's funny because they take shots at everybody except for the woman who dates a white dude. Like they say, like, oh, your husband, you know, has to pay all the bills and stuff. But I didn't realize until like later in the movie that it was a white dude. And I'm like,
right. Yeah, I don't think we even see him until the end.
Oh, yeah. I was like, all these shots she's taking, y'all not about to comment on this? I was like, this is what you should have. This is the zingers right here, man.
I wonder if that was supposed to read. I mean, it didn't to me, but I wonder if it's supposed to read as like a visual joke almost when he shows up and you're like, it was this dude the whole time. I don't think it's played that way, but like, I don't know if that's how it is in the book or if that, you know, there just seemed to be something to him not showing up until the end and it being a mixed race couple. And, you know, like, it just seemed like there was something to that.
Can I ask y'all a question? You feel free, anyway I can answer, but like, has anyone ever, because this movie, like a lot of the drama, if you will, is the age difference. Like eventually, like her worrying about the age and then seeing the differences, but then also bringing that younger person into their life. Has anyone dated someone like older and have had to have the relatable moments of these things we do have to like figure out because of the gap between?
Yeah. I had a couple of crushes.
My wife is younger than me.
I was asking in general. That was to you, Chantrell James. It wasn't just focused to you. It was just like, that wasn't just a you question. We know your wife is younger than you.
The way you jumped on that, Bray, need to know the story.
Everyone knows Bray's wife is much younger than him. Much younger than him. Yes, we all know.
What you trying to cover up?
No, James, what were you saying?
No, just you know, Kat and I are 2 days apart. Like, and I've had crushes, but never actually dated anybody who was significantly older than me.
Chantrell, have you dated someone younger than you?
I have.
Because basically, like, the whole crux of the movie is just the age difference. Have you ever?
Right, of course. Yeah, I mean, I've had, like, the youngest dude I've dated, best thing in the background is like, who? I've dated, like, 10 years younger, oldest 10 years older. I can't imagine if somebody will come up here and my bonus son will come home with somebody my age, because we're like the same, we're like that same age difference. So like, and even when we were doing his whole little Morehouse, you know, parent orientation weekend, everybody's like, how you doing, ma'am? And yes, ma'am. I was like, look at all these little southern, but you know, clearly I'm like, if somebody was trying to holler at my bonus son, it would be a problem. But yeah, nah, that whole 20 year age difference, like I'm not, but there have been some juvies in the past.
I love it.
Some juvies.
I love it.
I tried it. One time I dated a person 11 years older than me, and I realized it wasn't movies. It wasn't like going to a movie, but I realized the music references were different. Where like I would reference like Back That Thing Up as like a song I used to love. I would say like, man, when I was in high school, like the song was the jam. And I remember when I said it, like a look of terror came across her face. I was like, what? It's Juvenile. And she's like, how old were you when it came out? I was like, oh, you know, I was like 13, 14. And when I say it was silence for a little bit, it was like,
oh no, we're on the same age.
Yeah, it was not okay. It was like, you were that young? I was like, yeah, but that was years ago. Clearly, we're both over 21 now. You know? I got legit said it, like, we're both over 21 now. But yeah, that stuff, I do get that trend. Like, I think that was a really good thing they did in the movie, like not only focusing on like the family talking about it, but just being out in the world together, because there are those little nuances of like, you know, the books and movies your friends will watch if you're older, but then also like, you know, being in the line and everyone being younger and just kind of looking. So I thought they touched on that in a really, really nice way.
I think one of the things that I like the most about the film, particularly in its portrayal of, you know, Black, you know, like just relationships. So even outside of Stella's relationship with Winston, right? Mm-hmm. But just like her relationship with her sisters, mm-hmm. you know, and I think, so from a Black woman's perspective, mm-hmm. like a Gen Xer, 40-some-year-old mm-hmm. Black woman's mm-hmm. perspective, if I wasn't married, like, I could see myself easily. I mean, because I've taken those trips before, buku trips, mm-hmm. where I've traveled abroad, and I'm like, is it going to be the dude on the plane? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be the dude at the airport? Is it going to be, you know, yeah. And I remember, yeah, so there's been plenty of hot boys, exes, in different, you know, time zones, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was always, like, looking for the one. And she didn't necessarily go out there to, like, look for the one, but she ended up finding it. But when, like I said, getting back to my point, I love, you know, the relationships between, like, her and her sisters, mm-hmm. like, because that's a very real thing, particularly if you're single, you know, you know, you got the friends and the family, like, oh, when are you going to settle down? Or, you know, like her sister being judgmental, mm-hmm. you know, then they got the younger sister, like, bucking her up. And so, you know, just that person trying to hold the family together. Mm-hmm. And then also you're managing these relationships with these other women in your life, whether it's like your friends or your sisters. So I really enjoyed seeing that dynamic on the screen as well. Like, not just even, and then also her being a mom, right? Because she has this, you know, fine ass, you know, hot boy. And then she has this child that, and then his ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And so it's like all of these different dynamics plus her career and then the sisters. And so I think that for a lot of Black women in their 40s, whether they're single or not, managing all of those different relationships and navigating them is something that a lot of people can relate to.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about the movie, and that I think that, like, I'm not sure if going into this more would have made it more fun or less fun, but like the movie focused a lot on the differences of, like, these are the things that I find funny, and these are the things that you know, these are things that I like to do versus these are things that you like to do. But one of the things I think is interesting about people of that have, like, 20 years apart or more dating is, like, is the life experience thing. Like, I find it interesting that, like, he's like, I want to have a, they throw it away in, like, one line, I want to have a kid, and, like, you already have a kid and a career. Like, I don't know if focusing on that would have made the movie more fun, but like, I just feel like there is just even so many more areas that, like, is different about dating someone that's that much older than you or younger than
you. It's interesting because Chantrell, as kind of goes with you and Ginger saying, but, like, as you were talking about, like, how relatable and the experience of a woman in her 40s, and I was thinking movies now, like, I know, pretty, like, we were talking about, like, a lot of movies kind of now focus on, like, you know, Black pain and stuff like that. But I was trying to think of, like, how many movies have I seen, like, in theaters that have come out that have just been about, like, you know, Black women in particular just hanging out and doing stuff, like, outside of, like, the movies we had in the 90s of, like, Waiting to Exhale, How Stella Got a Groove Back. And for some reason, the biggest one I can think of is
Girls Trip.
And I may be the only one I can think of for, like, the last 10 years. And it's one of those things where I know there was a big change where people were saying it. So you had, like, a lot of older white women with these movies of, like, the friends trying to, like, date younger dudes and, like, different variations of life. But I haven't seen that many with Black women. And I'm like, I wonder, is it one of those things where now we're, like, do these movies get pitched, or are we waiting for Hollywood to go back in time when we could have movies just outside of our narrative movies, outside of our pain, that can get greenlit and made?
I think there's a lot of films that are getting pitched every day. You know, I have so many friends in the industry, and, you know, and even having pitched even television show ideas. And there's just like this real narrow focus on, particularly when you have white people on the other side of the table, mm-hmm. you know, where they're trying to tell you, oh, this is what audiences want. I'm like, but I'm the black audience. I know what I want to see mm-hmm. on television. I know what I want to see on film. And it's like, oh, but maybe you should just do this. Or you, but I'm like, how are you telling me this? Mm-hmm. I'm black. I have black friends. I went to black schools. Mm-hmm. I have I live in a black bubble. So I actually know the kind of conversations we have. I know when we're seeing like the same old tropes each and every day, we get tired of it. So I know that there are folks that are out there pitching. But then you have these execs who, where, you know, you can go and like pitch something and there aren't any other black people in the room, you know, or it's a particular type of black person. Because the idea also is that, you know, and I don't know where you all grew up. I know, Gerard, you grew up in D.C., mm-hmm. Southeast, mm-hmm. Southeast,
thanks.
South,
no, Southeast. Thanks. Stop playing. I tell you what, the
Howard. Go-Go is my shit, nah. Like, Go-Go is my shit. So I don't know where the rest of y'all grew up, but, you know, there are different, blackness is not a monolith. So, like, even there are companies and execs will think we have this one token black person and they can speak on the range of the black experience. And as you all know, you know, we're not a monolith. We can't be fit into this one box. So I was on a podcast the other day talking or something, IG Live or whatever. And I was talking to a person and I said, I want to do a film about my first trip to Nigeria. And she was like, oh, because that joint is going to be a motherfucking... that's going to be a cult classic. I mean, there was so many jokes. Mm-hmm. It was like jokes on jokes on jokes on jokes. And jokes was on us. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like jokes on the folks
that's
there.
Dope.
Like
that's
jokes
dope. On us.
And so she was like, oh, that's going to be my story. And I'm like, girl, and she was talking about her first trip to Ghana. But I'm like, there should be many conversations and films about mm-hmm. your first trip to the continent. Just like there are so many stories about World War II and so many stories about Queen Elizabeth and so many stories about the crown, like so many stories about JFK. So I'm like, why can't we have 10 stories about someone's first trip to Africa? Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think that there are people trying to get these stories told. But, you know, again, there are not enough people in the room who can make these decisions to greenlight these things.
Damn, you never lied. There is... Man, James, I feel like you talked about it once. It was like, I feel like there's so many movies about so many random white people who did average things. But then you think about like just other stories of like black people just doing something. It's like you get one attempt and that has to cover everything. And it's like, that is, I hear you. Like that is one of the most frustrating things ever, because I think even the people who are execs now, like one of my friends just got promoted to be an exec at a studio. And yeah, he's supposed to speak for everybody. He's supposed to speak for black men, black women. He's supposed to speak for black queer folk. And I'm like, this is not even a fair assessment, because now he's under a lot of pressure, because if he doesn't pick the right black film, it's like, not only is it going to hurt that film, but it's like, now we can't trust the one black dude we had in the room. Cause it's like, see, we gave you the opportunity. Guess you don't know what to do. And it's like, that's so much pressure.
Right. Well, it's also just like, you think about the fact that when this movie came out in the 90s, and when there were films with like majority black cast or all black cast, they were kind of labeled black films, right? So like, it was like not even targeted towards white people. The idea was like, well, this is like this demographic, black people will see this movie, and then but white people won't see it because black people are in it. Like nobody necessarily said that out loud, but like that's clearly how things were targeted. They would never release films like this internationally. And then I feel like now you have so many films that you have all these diversity initiatives, and you know, diversity is in, and the people want to tell inclusive stories, but I think people have an idea of what those inclusive stories look like, right? And instead of being able to just have a film that's just like people going on a trip, you know, or like, you know, like it's like, no, we need to tell like an important story that hasn't been told about the black experience and how hard it is, the struggle and blah, 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 you know? So, but like Chanchelle was saying, like, I think there are people wanting to create that And I think those stories are probably already written. You know, they're waiting to be made. Maybe they're being made right now. Who knows? But yeah, hopefully we get more things like this. Because, I mean, there's so much about this movie that I just read. I just looked at, because I was looking at some of these reviews. And this one review was like, there's only one missing one thing missing from this story, and it's the main ingredient, conflict. It's like a bad review that some white person gave about this movie. And it's like, there's conflict in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Right. All over the movie. But again, that's the problem when, and I myself, like, I don't subscribe to the same like mainstream norms. You know, I came into filmmaking through being a curator. And so my background was in Western art history. So I'm like, I'm going to make films and not going to be from a Western white person's lens of filmmaking. And so I don't know that, you know, certain folks have the capacity, you know, the understanding of the context to understand like, yeah, the conflict is the conflict between her and his mama. Like, what do you want to, you know, what you try, what you doing with my son? You can't find a man your own age. That's a conflict. That's conflict between her and her sister trying to tell her what to do. You know, she had conflict at her work. You know, I mean, conflict
with herself.
You
know,
yeah, exactly. Trying to fix conflict with herself, trying to be like, I am passionate about this one thing, but I'm making money in my career doing this other thing. Can I pursue both passion and purpose and thriving, right? So that's a lot of conflict there. But again, the need for, that's why, quote unquote, diversity is so important in terms of decision making, you know, when folks are at the table so that people can be like, oh, actually, like you said, Bray, like, you see, I'm calling you Bray.
It flows,
like,
right? Just, it flows, you know, right? Come on, man. It flows. It's easy. It's easy.
Right. You know, it's like, yeah, like there are folks that who understand and can point that out. And there's a need for that. Can what this kind of off subject though? I just want to throw this in because it made me think about something.
Yeah.
You know, there are times when I also watch like white films so I can escape, and I don't need a black person thrown in, right? Like, I think about like Sex and the City when they threw in Jennifer Hudson. I was like, I was okay with it being all white. Yeah. Don't give me a token black role either. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need that. Like, I'm okay. Even in Harry Potter, I'm a big Harry Potter fan. Like, I'm good with Hogwarts being like an all white school, because then I can't think about how y'all treating a little black boy or he, you know, whatever, right, you know what I'm saying? So don't give me tokenism either. And, or if we have a black film, then don't feel the need to like throw some random white person in, you know what I mean? That also express diversity, you know, like there ain't too many white folks living in my house. It's not, actually none. I don't know there have been any. It's okay. I went to Howard.
But you're saying makes so much sense, because it's that thing of like, I think the token is, to me, all that does is separate
us. We were talking about this with Black Superman.
Yeah, like literally Black Superman is giving me anxiety because I love comics, but also it's like the fact that we're calling him Black Superman already separates him from just being a Superman. Like,
wait, that's a thing?
Yes.
They want to make DC kind of announced they want to make a Superman film with a Black person playing Superman.
But they keep saying the articles call him Black Superman. Like, Idris Elba has talked about Bond, and he's like, yo, I don't want to do it because I don't want to be the Black Bond. I just want to be Bond. And that reminded me of this morning. I don't even know if this is a question. I think I know the answer, but how that review said there's no drama in this. I think Hollywood and people in general, and that goes for Black men too, not in everybody, but I think there's somehow like people find it hard to relate to what Black women go through. Cause I was talking about I May Destroy You this morning in comparison to like Promising Young Woman, and like how everyone loved Promising Young Woman. It was like got nominations. When it came to like I May Destroy You, she didn't win anything, even though this was like a critically acclaimed show. And I'm like, the only difference I can really think of is a racial difference, where it's like this Black woman is telling a story about something that is fictional but actually happened to her at the same time. And it feels like something that's so distant for people to sometimes understand. It's like, in my mind, we always separate when it comes to Black people. Like, we always separate our stories. Why people are like, oh, this is a Black thing that's happening. This is something that's happening to a Black woman. And it also doesn't, it makes it feel like it's not relatable to the masses. In my mind, it's like, how do we get to the point where like our story isn't necessarily just a Black story, but just like, this is an American story. Like, Stella is an American woman who wants to find love, who happens to be black and goes to Jamaica. You know what I mean? Like,
but you know what? It's interesting you said that, because again, going back to my experience as a curator, there was a whole movement called the post-black movement, you know, like a post-black art movement that was like kind of born out of, you know, like work at Studio Museum and different artists that are working there. And there was this whole kind of movement to talk about work from black artists that might deal with black subjectivity, but that they didn't want to be defined as black artists for that same reason. They just want to be defined as artists. And I always actually thought I've found that problematic, because I'm like, I'm biggity black, you know, because I'm like, it is very challenging, because I was my graduate training in Africana studies was an African centered school of thought, you know, at Temple University, where the idea is like, you should not have to say black excellence or black this or black that, because by default, it is excellent if it's black. Mm-hmm. And so by putting black on it, it's giving credence to white supremacy. But for me, so I understand that. So I should just, when I say books, I shouldn't have to say a black book if I'm censoring myself, right? I shouldn't have to say I'm about to read this good black book. I should just say I'm reading a good book, even though it's black, because I'm censoring my own experience, and then put the label on white or anything outside of my blackness. Oh. But at the same time, there's something about asserting my identity, you know, with like a black film, a black story, a black art, because we're still, even though we're the majority in the world, we're still kind of inside of a white, racist, Eurocentric, white supremacist framework. And I think there's something to be said about asserting or over-asserting blackness that that also centers us and kind of contends with the challenges that we have to face as black folks in these spaces, if that makes any sense.
No, it does.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that does. I mean, and that's such the conflict, isn't it? It's like, I feel like that also is a thing for me too. It's like, black people have to have so much, there's so many thoughts that have to go into anything. Like, literally, like, do I call it like the black art, or is it just art? The fact that like, we even have to have that issue sometimes gets to me. It's like, you know, we used to be on an improv team together, and we would have talks about like the type of comedy we would do, like how black centric could we make it, you know what I mean? Whereas like, we're in a place where like all other white teams, and I'm like, there's no way these other teams would be like, hey, are we talking about Star Wars too much today? Is it too white? Like, maybe that Back to the Future joke wasn't necessary, but like, we, you know, I remember one of our friends had such a problem because he said quarter water on stage, and he was like, it's too black, no one knows what that is. And I'm like, bruh, but some person in that audience knows what the fuck quarter water is.
Wait, but is that too black? What is quarter water?
Quarter water is a very New York, it's like New York black. It's like, we all had it, but
we all had it. But
it's a very New York term for like the small, like, you know, like the little baby waters you get.
Those drinks.
The little juices.
I don't even remember calling it quarter water. I just was like,
oh, like
drink,
the Huggies.
Red drink.
I called them Huggies.
I know.
Okay, so yeah. Cecil, but is that that goes back to the whole conversation about blackness being a monolith? Because it's not like it's too black. That's New York. I'm not talking about that shit in New Orleans.
True.
We call our soft drinks.
Right.
We don't call it pop. We don't call it soda. We call it cold drinks. Even if it's hot, it's cold. Coke gonna be a cold drink. 7-Up gonna be a cold drink. Big Shot gonna be a cold drink. It could be hot as hell because it's been sitting outside all day, and it's gonna be a cold drink. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
real.
So that's it's also regional. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so again,
yeah,
that's even the idea. So even saying that, like, is it too black? But it's like, oh, this is a very specific form of, you know, black culture, and it should be able to be expressed. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, because like, and even I say buku. In Cali, they say hella. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say hella because I'm going to say buku. Mm-hmm. In New York, folks were saying like mad. Like there's like mad people. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm not going to code switch to make somebody else feel comfortable.
Yeah.
How could I? So your boy should be able to say quarter water. And I don't have to know what that means as a black person.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to say. I should not have to pretend to know what that means either.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah, he was so mad. Yeah, I mean, no, you're so right. Dang. Oh, you say, well, sorry, this is now just another reference. You say buku? Is that what it is?
Buku.
Buku?
Buku. Buku. Yeah, buku people. They have buku people at the party. Or they got buku food at their house. Buku.
Buku. No, I love it because I love everybody's things. I know in DC we say mo, ja, and stuff like that. And I not just learned, but I've been hearing it more now that I've been around Philly people who say John. I can't say it right. John.
And bald. It's like young bald.
Yeah.
John, so
yeah.
I was like, young bald over there.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Sorry. That literally is just a side note for me. I'm like, okay, buku. All right. New Orleans. Got it. Like, I just like to know people. You gotta put it in the script. Buku. Got it.
Yeah. But even so, like my godson is over here right now too. He's from Philly. He's black, Puerto Rican, Afro-Latino. Mm-hmm. So folks to see him, like, oh, I thought he's Puerto Rican. He is. Both his parents are Puerto Rican. He's black. Mm-hmm. Like, there are black Puerto Ricans, mm-hmm. black Dominicans, black Cubans, mm-hmm. black Brazilians, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And so he'll talk about, like, stories he want to tell. And I'm always just like, yeah, like, center yourself. You know, I'm also, like, telling stories that we haven't heard before either, you know, but, like, he has a very specific lens as a black Puerto Rican. He's 21 years old, growing up in North Philly. And so that's a very specific experience. And there's like probably folks from like, it might be similar to Meek Mill's experience. It might be a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? Because what he's eating at home might be a little bit different than what Meek is eating at home. And I don't know too much about Meek Mill. Just like, I probably wouldn't even know who he was if I crossed him on the street. I mean, he like walked past him. Just letting you know, because again, and it's funny, even when I'm talking to my friends in the Netherlands, I've been going back and forth to the Netherlands for like about 10 years. And they'll tell me something about like a black movie here. Mm. And I'm like, I haven't seen that. Or I haven't even heard of it before. Or they might mention a black actor or actress. And I'm like,
who is that? Mm-hmm. Who is?
I'm not familiar.
Don't know who that is.
But it's this expectation because you're black, then you're supposed to know.
Yeah.
Know everything about black culture.
Certain aspects that's exhausting. Of black culture I'm just not interested in.
Right.
Certain movies I'm not going to watch because I just don't feel like it.
Right. Yeah. Which is like, and that's the thing. That's the thing that was so annoying about this period of time in which it's like, oh, it's all black cast. So like black people, everybody black has to know what that movie is and has to like it and seen it. And then white people have the expectation is that they haven't seen it. They don't know they don't even know what the movie is. They don't even know who those actors are. And it's because of that weird, it's just like historical segregation of, you know, these crazy notions of what it even means to be black and to be white, you know. I mean, but this movie, I mean, it's so funny because like I do think like I was thinking about this stuff when I was watching this movie because I was like, this movie is just it's a romance like mm-hmm. any other romance movie, right? Like, yes, like there's something about black culture that is infused within it that makes it amazing. Like I love that. I love the aspects of the cookouts. I love the like different you know, the different kind of influences that we see, like black community influences that we see within the movie, like just the way that Whoopi and mm-hmm. Angela are relating to each other, like, you know, it feels different. There's a different energy there than the energy between, you know, the Sex and the City ladies. But at the end of the day, they're still talking about men, you know, like they're still talking about like who'd you sleep with, like, you know, what's going on. They're having fun together. Like, it's just like girl talk. It's like it's a fun thing to witness. And there's no reason why just the same way that black people could watch yes. movies with all white cast and like not, you know what I mean? Like, why can't white people watch movies with all black cast? Right.
But again, yeah. I don't care if white people watch. I don't say I don't care, but it's okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like people should do what they want to do. If white people don't want to watch a movie with an all black cast, then don't watch a movie. Like, I think we crave for validation so much. Like, see me, I want to be seen. And I'm like, is it not good enough that black folks are watching it? Now, when it comes to awards and recognition, but again, it's like, if you're looking for that validation, then maybe you need white folks to watch. But I mean, I think even Black Panther was an example of that. I went to school with Chad, FYI. You know, he's one of my friends. And I used to go to Ira Eldridge Theater and watch him perform because he was like really close to one of my best friends. And I used to was like, oh, this is like really country, you know, because he would be wearing overalls and like chewing on straws, something like that. And You know, he was like one of those weird fine arts students. Weird to me, because I'm coming from straight out of New Orleans. And I'm like, all with fine arts kids were like artsy. So they were like in another category. You know, I was a hot girl. I was like trying to pledge and, you know, hang out with the football team. I wasn't trying to have fun. So my best friend was like learning how to play guitar from Chad in the middle of the yard. I'm like, yo, and going natural and burning incense. I'm like, yo, she didn't fucking lost her mind. But I don't even know what the point was. What was I talking about?
Well, I mean, you're talking about the...
Needing their validation and stuff. Right. And I'm like, is it okay if just black people watch her shit? Is it okay if you just get recognized by, like, you know, NAACP Image Awards and all that kind of stuff? And, I mean, granted, I have a film that's on Netflix right now. For me, the biggest win about that, and shout out to Array, you know, Ava, who's been pushing, you know, black storytelling or whatever, but is that more people will be able to see it. That's the biggest win and validation that that comes with mainstream. You know what I mean? Is that there'll be more black people that can see it because it's on Netflix. Not that I need white people to see my film and tell me how they feel about it.
That's right, real. Exactly. Yeah, no, that's my point. Isn't that white people need? It would be nice for white people to validate it by watching it, or if they don't want to watch it, being like, no, you should watch it. It's the people who were pushing the movie, and they were only targeting black people, and they were like, not even white people didn't even know about the movie because there was an assumption that white people wouldn't want to watch anything. It was like a racist assumption. It was like projecting racism onto other white people, which is like a thing that I think people do, and they don't even like it. It was one of those things, like, this is not a political podcast, but it was one of those things where, like, you know, they would talk, like, even during the election time, they'd be like, oh, well, the white people won't vote for that candidate because they're like, white people would say this, like, oh, my family wouldn't vote for this person because they're kind of racist, so they wouldn't vote for this XYZ person because they're racist. And it's like, okay, but I don't know, the assumption that somebody won't like something just because it's an all black cast, like a white person wouldn't want to watch it or couldn't relate to it, like, that in and of itself is what bothers me. Not that if they don't want to watch it, fine, they don't want to watch it, you know what I mean? But it's usually they don't even know about it, you know, that was once upon a time brought to Netflix's attention about their algorithms, about how they were, you know, if you're watching something with black people, then they're like, all right, so this person is might be black, and so they're only going to watch content with other black people, you know. Right. And then
they're not thinking about somebody like Chantrell who wants to watch Harry Potter and The Crown and, you know, shit about the Russian czars. And I could write a dissertation about, like, the Russian Empire and the fall of the Russian Empire, because I've, like, deep dived into so much shit. Right. And so folks would be like, I honestly haven't seen Girl Trip, because I actually get annoyed sometimes, you know, how in New Orleans, I'm like, I want to be in New Orleans when it's New Orleans folks in New Orleans. But I know we really, you know, the tourism, I didn't go to Essence a whole lot like that. Cause I would be like, I'm gonna go to Jazz Fest, and it was just like us and not a whole bunch of tourists coming acting real crazy in my city. But the expectation though, as a black woman, would be that. And I know that it was like super funny. You know, like, I've heard nothing but rave reviews from my friends, but, like, honestly, I haven't watched it. So I don't know if people judge me, but, like, that's how I judge people who haven't seen, like, Color Purple or The Will. I'm like, how can you? I mean, I could pull Color Purple down. Like, all my life I had to fight. You know what I'm saying? And, like, I was married now. Wait, did y'all see Color Purple?
Oh, yeah. We reviewed that. Like, you bringing up The Wiz. Come on now.
The Wiz. Like, one of my homeboys told me he never saw The Wiz. And I'm like, how you not? He older than me. I'm like, how did you not ever see The Wiz? Right. You know what I'm saying? But anyway.
I think that's so real. What you're saying, I think we're, as black people, are expected. But again, that's the thing, is like, people expect you to have seen Girls Trip, and it's like, it's black. Right. Why didn't you see it? Like,
there's I'm a black woman. Yeah. I'm a cisgender, cishet black woman.
It's like, why didn't you see it? Like, I feel like there's so many times, but the thing that I do want, and it goes back to Bray, is like, I think when people just start marketing our projects, it's just, this is the new movie out this week. Like, this is the new doc out this week. And it's like, even if it is black specific, it is something where, like, yeah, I grew up watching action movies, and it was never a black dude until 1996, when Will Smith got to save the world from aliens. But every year prior to that, I was watching Bruce Willis, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger saved the world. And at no point as a kid, I was like, I can never save the world because they white. And I do feel like if we have more heroes like that, there will be like white kids, Latino kids, Asian kids be like, oh yeah, this is just now our hero. And yes, they will know he's black, but it's also like, it is cool to see this black person save the world. But I don't know. These things are, yeah, we just need more studios. We need 20 more macros and then, you know, yeah. 20 more black hotels and then we'd be good.
And so, I mean, also like 20, like more like black. And that's why, like my husband and I have a company called Shop Black where we promote black owned businesses globally. Mm. And, I think that's why black resources and wealth is so important, because someone doesn't have to want to, you know, star in the film or, you know, be involved in the film industry, but folks can executive produce, you know, and folks can like pool their money and resources together. But, like, that's why we need resources, you know. I mean, it's not just like in the film industry with black schools, the institutions, you know, I'm like, you know, black, there's, resources are so important. I mean, money is so important. I feel like there are folks who use their resources to help push narratives, you know, forward. But I think we also need more of that. So even if there are like black folks in the tech industry, they need, like, some of them need to also pull their resources in productions as well. Like, come on board as EPs. Like, they don't have to own their own production company, but they can like also funnel some of their resources. But you know, I'm trying to be rich myself, so I don't have to like preach to other people how they should spend their own money. But I could, you know, do that myself.
That's real, because I think I guess this is a plug. I know a lot of people right now. You know, I used to work at Viacom, and they're greatly trying to diversify, but have no clue how to do it. So a lot of people, especially, I'm a snitch, whatever. Viacom is very dependent on Array's new database of, like, you know, because she has a database where, like, below the line, people can, like, hey, I'm an editor, a black editor.
Array Crew.
And so, like, you'll talk to these people, you know, who've run the post department for 20 years, and you're like, hey, we would like 4 black editors on this project. And they will go silent. Like, I mean, I've been on calls in this, I'm like, hey, we have a show. We kind of want someone who understands the black voice, who's younger, who's, you know, knows marketing, knows Twitter. And then you'll get on the call and the whole marketing department's on the call and there's not a single black person on the call. And then if you call them out, they'd be like, we can find some, you know. It's just one of those things where I just think people need to do the work. And it's like, yes, I think as black people, we can help. But it's also like, look, man, at the end of the day, you have a huge corporation with resources and money. Like, you can, someone can reach out to you now as this podcast and be like, yo, let's funnel money into your company. Like, let's help expand this thing. So you are not the one trying to get your movies made and doing all this legwork that companies should be doing their goddamn self. To me, it's like, it is so crazy when I see these execs talk about like, oh, we want to diversify movies, but they haven't diversified the board. It's like we got so many streets where it's like, oh, Black Lives Matter lane. And I'm like, cool. Have we actually restructured the police department yet? Like, we haven't, like, literally, there's so many. I walked past this thing right here in Hollywood, and it had a list of black people who have lost their lives dating all the way back to Emmett Till. And it was like, we support you. And it was like, cool. But what have you done yet? Like, what is the physical action that has been created to help this thing? And I'm like, anyway, I just don't want all the burden to be on us.
But this is not a political podcast, but go ahead.
Yes, we're not. Yeah. I just don't want the burden to be on us to fix problems that we didn't cause. That is my thing.
Any last thoughts about the movie, how it ended, or did you guys like the ending? Did you like the fact that they got together at the end?
Dude, first off, I was like, how'd she get there so fast?
Yeah.
How she beat him to the airport.
She knew the traffic.
I really think it's a very beautiful ending when they hug and then everyone in the airport disappears. Like, that's really sweet.
It's just them having that moment. Man, yeah. Listen, I just want to talk to Hollywood. I'm like, yo, y'all can give me...
The world melted away.
It's going to be quick, bro. I promise. I'm going to just talk to Hollywood for 2 seconds.
Okay.
All right. I know y'all trying to fix your problems. And yes, you are racist. You have a system of being racist. You know, it's factual. It's like, it is what it is, you know. But I do want to see more black love movies, yo. Like, I remember I grew up and, like, my family loved Love Jones. They loved Hustler Got Their Groove Back. Like, Wait in Exhale was such a big deal. And it's like, I really do want that for the generation now, whether it's like us or even the generation under us. I just want them to grow up to be like, yo, this is that really cool love story that people aspire to, that like people watch every Valentine's Day. Like if you have, I forgot what the Friends Valentine's Day is, but if you have one of those, like this is the movie you can put on. I want more of that. I want more things that show Black people in loving relationships, in pop, you know, this, I just want people to understand that like you can experience like heartbreak and then make it out of it. I just want more movies like that. Not just like someone goes on a downward spiral, not like, oh, we can't get past this like thing we're going against, but like we can figure it out and have that be a nice Black love story. Yeah. We deserve the love, right? Come on, man.
I just found it interesting that Taye Diggs like sort of shows up in her life as this kind of figure who like shows her a different side of like what love is. And it felt you know, to me, it's just like in Collateral Beauty when like the people come in and they sort of represent different parts of their life. Like, you know, Taye Diggs,
he's talking about that Will
case.
Smith movie where Will Smith
Taye Diggs
is talking
love
to ghosts.
In this case, you know, and so. And I think that was Keira Knightley in Collateral Beauty. But in,
I don't
but
think
in,
this, really
in this movie,
I don't think this really
have no idea what you're talking about.
I think
no,
you're embarrassing
I
us now.
I think it's the same thing. You know,
I think you're officially
sort of
I think we're doing good. You're embarrassing us now, James.
Have you guys seen Collateral Beauty? What did you think of that?
I don't know.
We're not talking about
this question.
Is Collateral
Beauty
good?
Let's end this. John?
Oh, y'all shut James down.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
I started rewatching a lot of 90s Black women's movies and reading that, you know, because there was also a huge renaissance of Black women's lit as well, and a lot of Black women literature that came out also during that time period. So I've been revisiting this as a grown woman with new eyes, with fresh eyes. And I would love to see, and this is probably self-centered and selfish, but you know, yeah, more stories even about 40 something year old Black women. Cause also it's typically, I think films tend to err on the young side of things. Like, and you know, cause youth culture sells and that's important, or like the older size of things, right? But, you know, I know, like, as a woman, like I said, who got married in my late 30s, I still have a lot of single friends, like folks out here who are like thriving and living their best lives. But we just have a diverse range of experiences. And I want to see more films like that. I want to see more diasporic films. And I'm like, it's cool. I don't have a beef when like someone that's Black Brit that plays a Black American part, because Black Americans been playing like South Africans, clearly in this Jamaicans, you know, for so long. I want to hear different accents. Like I'm like, it's okay to have, like, my husband is a Black Brit, Nigerian. He was born in the UK, moved back to Nigeria, to Lagos, and then he came to Howard. So where's that story? You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I don't need someone to put on an American accent or put on like a fake South African accent. I just want to see the diversity, you know, but I, you know, I really enjoy watching this film again. Like I said, you know, won't confirm or deny if there's any role playing that happens.
I feel like this is your second time. I feel like this is the confirmation that there was just official.
It just feels like, you know, there's no point in bringing it up even if you.
I feel like this is the second, maybe third time. I mean, like, I'm not saying there was role playing.
I really enjoy watching this over again.
See, now I'm even taking that part.
Yeah, like, did you watch the movie
watching
or
the movie,
what did you do?
I feel like your experience in this movie is a whole different experience.
Could be not.
We were talking about
which movie is that from? Which movie is that from?
Could be not.
Could be not. Who's to say? Wait. Oh, wait, damn.
Oh, don't do this to us. Not today.
Don't do this. Oh, wait, and she's looking. For everyone at home, she is waiting for this answer. And my hand is on the mic, so I can't type the line in Google.
I have no clue.
I know.
Back to me.
What is it?
That's kind of like a lightweight fail, but y'all get back to
wait,
me.
Wait, what was it?
What's it,
I'm
James?
I'm not going to tell y'all.
But
y'all
it's like
have
that,
to go
too,
and figure
though,
that
right?
One out.
With that kind of cadence, could
the line
be,
could
be not.
Could be not.
Who's to say?
Could be. Could be not. Who's to say?
Is that? No. Is that? Okay. I got two movies, and this is probably bad. Should I guess? Because my mind is either Color Purple or Poetic Justice. I have no reasons for either one.
Color Purple.
Color Purple.
Gerard.
I can't tell you a character, but it's like, it sounds like one of those movies, because in my mind, I was like, is this something Regina King would say? Or is this something like, okay.
This is Whoopi.
It's
you were raised well, Gerard. Them people that was bootlegging and stuff like that, they're raised.
It's missed.
Now, I'm going to tell you what's so sad about this. My mom, I called her before this. She's like, okay, I listened to the episode that you film on, I mean, record on Mother's Day. Now she's going to know I called them bootleggers. And now she goes.
Amazing.
Now, that was the scene when Danny Glover was at the at the dinner table. And Miss, that's it was. Silly was asking him if any more letters came for her. And when she's about to stab her ass, did I ever ask you for anything? Did I ever ask you for anything? I ain't never asked you not for anything. Not even your sorry ass hand in marriage.
No. Listen, I was thinking about Whoopi. I feel like we don't even talk. I feel like, because that was Whoopi's first movie, right? Wasn't that her first movie?
I don't know. Did she do Ghost before that? I can't remember.
What about Jumpin' Jack Flash? And
I think that was after too. I only think about Whoopi because I'm like, when you think about her filmography, it's like this woman has accomplished so much so early on. Like that movie, I used to love. What was it? She was a coach for like the New York Knicks. Eddie, was it Eddie?
Yeah, that was in the 90s.
Like, but the grand scheme of things, and now I mean,
oh wow, yeah,
it was her first,
She did a movie called Citizen. She was in a movie called Citizen. I don't know what this movie is. I've never even heard of it. Directed by William Farley. That was her first movie, and then this.
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week, we had a very special guest, Hiss Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live.
It's time for The Cause. We rate and review films not based on how much we liked it, but whether or not they helped the cause of more leading Black actors in Hollywood. So if we feel like the film fully helped the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood, we give it a black fist. If we think it somewhat helped the cause, we give it a white palm. If we think it didn't help the cause at all, we don't give it anything. So on the count of three, we're just going to raise our ratings for how Stella got her groove back. Okay? One.
All right.
Two. Three.
Boop. There we go.
Yeah. Black fist.
There we go. I think we already said why we liked it. Like, Chantra said it. I'm just in with, like, I just really enjoy seeing these Black people in Jamaica and, like, Black people with money and Black people, like, dealing with stuff that wasn't, like, the Black struggle of it all. So, I'm here for it. Also, lotion they gave Taye Diggs, my man was moisturized. And I'm like, I really respect
that's
the moisturization.
Not lotion, that's oils, baby. That's oils, baby.
Taye Diggs got to shine. Angela shined. Whoopi shined, as she always does. I mean, yeah, Regina King. I mean, yeah, come on. Black fist, baby.
Yeah, shots. Chantra, thanks for being with us today.
Yes, thank you for being here.
It's been my pleasure.
Now this is the official plug time. Do you want to plug the film and anything else? People can follow you, Twitter, Instagram.
Oh, In Our Mother's Gardens is on Netflix now. People can follow me on Instagram at AP Shantology. Follow the film In Our Mother's Gardens. Go to the website. Shout out to Ray. You know, amazing. Miss Duvernay, Tulane, the whole Ray crew and team. Thanks for releasing the film. And yeah, thanks. It's been fun.
Thank you. Thanks for hanging with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you can follow us at Blackman Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. BlackmanPodcast.com is our website. Got links to our merch there. We got links to our defunct Patreon that will one day rise from the ashes.
We talk about it all the time.
You can follow me at John Braylock.
Twitter, follow me at James Third Comedy.
You can follow me at Draw Milligan on Twitter and Instagram. Draw is J-E-R-A-H.
Wow.
He didn't say James 3RD.
Oh, right. And if you rate and review us on iTunes and give us 5 stars, we'll read your review on the air. This one is from Joe Baltimore. Hey guys, great show. Look forward to every episode. Really keeps me entertained during the year I had to work from home. By the way, if you are looking for a movie to review starring two black actors, you should check out Bad Trip on Netflix. It's very silly but amusing. And then, of course, we did it. So thank you.
Thank you for that.
We did that one. All right.
Thank you all. We will see you next week. Peace.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, produced by Melissa D. Montz. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.
Forever Dog.
What's up, Black Men Can't Jump comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!